Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
Dave, listen, I have three daughters, and that's like asking me to pick which of my daughters I love the most. It really is. And just for the reasons you mentioned, I mean, the fact that we're still selling products that are very similar to what my grandfather used to start this company 102 years ago, I mean, that really means a lot to me.
That was David Brand sharing the essence of his family company, Coast Knives, and my weird fascination with headlamps today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how's it going today? Thanks for stopping by the Fly Fishing Show. If you get a chance, please head over to Instagram and follow us at Wet Fly Swing. And you can also find us on any of the social media apps out there. And leave a lightning bolt emoji if you get a chance. That way I'll know I can track you down and say hey. Before we get started, let's hear from our sponsor. Togan's Fly Shop, providing superior products at an affordable price. An amazing resource for fly tying materials, tools, and fishing accessories. Since 2005, Togan's has been over-delivering on price, service, and passion, and now it's time to discover the Togan's buzz for yourself. Head over to wetflyswing.com/Togan's to get started today. You support this podcast by clicking over to take a look at Togan's online. That's wetflyswing.com/Togan's. T-O-G-E-N-S. Togan's. David Brands, third generation head man at Coast, is on the show to share his powerful family story today. We find out how Coast got started over 100 years ago selling knives with a focus on the fishing industry, then transitioned into LED technology, leading the way there with some pretty cool innovations. Lots of good stuff, lots of good stories from one of the companies that I love today. So without further ado, here is David Brands from CoastPortland.com. How's it going, David?
Great. How are you today, Dave?
Good, good. Thanks for taking a little time out of your, I'm sure, your busy schedule to get on a podcast here. I've been using a number of your products over the years, and I'm always interested to reach out to companies that I kind of love and, you know, share them with our audience. I'm sure there's some people that don't know about Coast and kind of some of the stuff you have going with your knives and lights and things like that. But, you know, I want to take us back because I love the stories, and maybe I know you've got a family history here. Can you just bring us back to like the story just quickly to how Coast got going? I think it started with your grandpa, right?
Absolutely. Yes. My grandfather moved to Portland, Oregon in 1915 from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and he was employed by a wholesale hardware company out of Minneapolis. And like a typical wholesale hardware salesman in those days, he would carry around a big catalog of products and call on hardware stores and sporting goods stores and sell them everything from hammers and nails to nuts and bolts to fishing rods. And what he quickly learned about the Northwest is that there were two big industries here at that time. One was logging, and the second one was commercial fishing. And in those days, in the early 1900s, particularly salmon fishing was a huge business out here, everywhere from Crescent City, California, north to the Canadian border. And the places like Astoria, Crescent City, Hoquiam, Aberdeen, Washington, had canneries along the waterfront. And filleting salmon and canning salmon is one of their big businesses. And my grandfather quickly learned that the fillet knives that he had available to sell through his hardware wholesaler were really not suited for salmon fishing and salmon filleting and canning because they were too they weren't strong enough, and there were a couple other problems. So he invented the first product for Coast, which was a fillet knife with a thicker, heavier duty blade, but more importantly, a spoon built into the back of the handle so that the cannery workers could gut and clean the salmon with one tool instead of having to use two. And so he contracted with a local guy in Portland, went in business with a local guy, and started making these salmon fillet knives, which he invented, and would literally load them into his car and sell them right out of his car to the workers in the canneries up and down the West Coast. And he did that for a couple of years until it got to be enough of a business that he left his wholesale hardware company job in 1919 and started Coast Cutlery Company in Portland. And that's how we got started.
There you go. And those... I was loving it because I was doing a little bit of research. I saw that knife and it reminded me, I'm not sure if there were some knockoffs, but I'm pretty sure I have that same knife. My grandpa, similarly back in the time, you know, he was a big fisherman and stuff like that. So was my dad. So I'll have to check that out. But I know the knife because it's got like a wooden handle, right?
And it's yeah. Yep. It's really what put Coast on the map. And then immediately after that, he developed a product specifically for the loggers who were cutting these, of course, massive Douglas firs and redwood trees out here in those days. And he developed what's called a Scribner's knife, which actually isn't a knife. It's used to mark the trees that they're going to cut. And so that was the second product he made. And those two products not only kind of got the company started, but it really established the mission early on that we still have today. And that is that we develop products that make people's jobs safer and easier. And basically, you come up with a better solution for a product than currently exists. And that's how our business was started. And that's what we try to continue to do today.
That's it. So basically, you know, and that's awesome to hear. I think I was going to ask you that, you know, just thinking about some questions to dig into. And, you know, one of them is kind of an obvious one on the business side is your target customer, because you have a lot of different products, different knives. But it sounds like you think of more of this B2B. I know you do have tons of just normal consumers, but who is that person? Who is your target customer?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. It's changed a little bit over the years, of course, because the nature of people's work and the nature of people's recreation has changed a lot. But our primary target is people who need either a knife, a light, a multi-tool, or safety products to make their work easier, their recreation easier, and safer than other products on the market. So, for instance, we do a very large business in the professional trade category, plumbers, electricians, contractors, but also we do a very significant business in the outdoor recreation business, hunters, fishermen, campers. And it's interesting because even though there's obviously a lot of crossover between, you know, a guy who's a plumber during the day on weekends loves to hunt and fish and camp, right? But what's interesting is because of the way technology is developed and because of the way we think about product development, we develop specific products for different uses. So it's not necessarily that he uses the same Coast product when he's working at his plumbing job that he does when he goes camping, but he's learned to trust Coast that we can do both for him safer and easier than anything else on the market.
That's right. Okay. So yeah, there's tons of overlap there. And I'm similarly for me, you know, obviously hunting, fishing is huge, and
You know, I think I would like to dig in a little more to the knives and some of that history there, because I have a knife here. I can't remember what model it is, but it's kind of like an everyday carry sort of thing. And but also headlamps. I'm kind of a headlamp freak. You know, I've been where, you know, like kind of using headlamps for, it seems like my whole life. But I'm just curious on the knife. So let's start there just a second. I mean, you have tons of models, right? And that's the question is, like, if somebody's choosing a knife, I'm just curious, where do you, you know, if somebody has that question, like, what knife do I need? What do you tell them?
Well, that's a really good question and one that we get a lot. And the way we try to break it down into a little bit of categories, but to simplify it, you know, knives are generally used in a couple of different instances. They're used as an everyday tool to cut, you know, anything from cardboard to wire strapping to, you know, you name it, right? And those types of knives really take a beating, and they need to be rugged, and they need to last, and they need to, you know, withstand a lot of use that, you know, may or may not have been the intended use of a knife, right? On the other extreme, you get a lot of people that want to buy that special knife for their, you know, annual or semi-annual or monthly, you know, hunting trip. And so it's a little bit more of a specialty product that they want it to be, you know, just perfect for a particular use and for their particular, you know, hand and everything else. So there's really, you know, a multitude of different users. And so we try to make products that fit into both categories so that like I said before, the same guy who may need his knife because he works in a warehouse and needs to cut cardboard packages every day and strapping off of packages, he has a knife for that use. But then when he goes camping or hunting that weekend, he has a different knife that's a little bit, you know, more specialty perhaps, and a little bit, you know, more of a premium knife that he just dearly loves. That's kind of the extremes.
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah. And I did see on there, I was just looking online, I think there was somebody that said there was some comment, and they're like, man, I got this, this might have been an old comment, but he's like, I got this great knife from Coast for like $7, right? It's like, and I know you guys have some knives that are like $10, but I mean, that seems amazing, right? Because there's tons of companies. I mean, and actually Portland and Oregon is a really hot spot for, you know, you got the Gerbers and leather. I mean, you got all these like Portland or Oregon companies. So there's definitely lots of competition there. But you guys have like a knife you can get for $10, right? I mean, how is that? I guess talk about that a little bit. Is that kind of where you guys are? I mean, you obviously have more expensive premium knives as well, but talk about that lower end knife. What do you get with that knife? How is that different?
Yeah, quite honestly, that's a little bit of an extreme. We really, you know, our bread and butter price points and not in the knife category are really between $20 and $40. We do have some that are a little bit less expensive. For instance, our double lock utility knives, which are, you know, with replaceable razor blades that go in them, that have a patented second lock on them to make them safer to avoid accidents. We make those to be a very affordable price because they're used so often and people, you know, go through them pretty quickly. So we have some of those that are in the $10 to $12 retail price range. But most of our knives, we do consider our knives a great value, no matter what the price they are. But most of our knives are really in the $20 to $40 price range. And generally, the ones that are used more for everyday work tend to be on the, you know, lower price range. And then the more premium knives that have, you know, maybe a little higher quality steel, a little bit nicer, different handle material, those tend to be in the $35 to $40 retail price range.
Gotcha. Okay, perfect. And I don't want to dig in too deep to any of this. You know, if anybody has questions, I'll put a link out so they can reach out to you. And you mentioned You haven't asked the president, right? A little link, yeah, they could check in with you. So, but I did want to. I was curious. So let's go back. You know, we got the history. So your grandfather started the company. I know your dad obviously was in the middle there. How did the transition go? You know, you start as a knife company, and then eventually you get in. Now you've got these LED lights and everything. How did that transition go out of knives, or to expand?
Well, it's a very good question, and I won't bore you with the entire 102-year history, but it's kind of interesting to look at it in segments because obviously any company that's 102 years old really has to change with the times. You can't keep doing the same thing forever, or you'll be non-existent. So my grandfather started by, as I mentioned, making specific knives for specific uses here in the Northwest. Then very quickly, actually, after that, he expanded into quite a few other cutting products. At one point, we actually made kitchen cutlery. We made scissors and shears, both for a home as well as commercial use. And so we were really a cutlery company for about the first 30 years of the company's existence. Then when my father got involved, and then my grandfather went through a couple, you know, really interesting periods in history. Of course, he went through the Depression, then World War II started, and then my father was drafted and went to fight in World War II. And then when he came out of the war in the late 40s, then he took over the company from my grandfather, and that my father was really the first one to take a really small regional company and look to expand it more geographically. So he did develop a number of new products as well, but his focus was really to, you know, broaden our customer base, expand our business geographically, and take advantage of kind of the post-war boom in terms of business and people coming back from the war and the economy really, you know, starting to roll again. But even with my father, he was pretty much kept at a cutlery company until I got involved in the early 1980s. And then our first big innovation in the 1980s was we got into the multi-tool business along with, you know, some of the other companies that you mentioned. And multi-tools became a very, very significant part of our business and still is today. In fact, to your point, at one point a couple of years ago, somebody did a survey that said 95% of all multi-tools sold in the United States come from Portland, Oregon, within about a 10-mile radius, which is really remarkable when you think about it.
I don't want to miss this because I'm curious. Why? This is a question that's always come up to me and people have asked, like, why is that? You know, why is Portland, Oregon the multi-tool capital of the world?
Well, specifically the multi-tool capital, that's kind of a separate question. You asked a little earlier, why are all these cutlery companies in Portland, Oregon, right? Well, almost every one of them can somehow be traced to Coast Cutlery Company. There are a number of stories, but, you know, as in any successful company, people that work there sometimes think either they can do it better or they just want to be their own boss or whatever. So most of the other cutlery companies that started in Portland have some connection to Coast. Now, as for the multi-tool business, you know, during its peak, the multi-tools were made by probably 50 different manufacturers. It just so happened that after all of that shakeout, the only ones really still, you know, standing and still selling any quantity of multi-tools are located in Portland. That is a little bit, probably got a little something to do with the fact that, you know, Leatherman and Coast and Gerber got into the business before pretty much everybody else. But it also probably has to do as much with the kind of the longevity and consistency of the companies themselves. So, but it is it's very interesting that so many knives and multi-tools come from Portland.
if you look back on it, you know, the secret to your success, right? I mean, you've got probably lots of companies that tried to copy you, were there along the way and are gone now. I mean, you've been out, you guys have been going for a while. I mean, is there one thing you attribute the, you know, your success to?
Well, I think, yeah, there, I think there are a couple things. First of all, you know, it's unusual for a company to be owned by one family for 102 years. And so when it's, when you own a family company, you have a much higher level of responsibility than you do if you just work for a company or you're a public owned company or you're a division of a larger corporation. And it, that permeates really all the way through the company. Not only obviously is it my family's livelihood, but I take every decision we make personally in the terms of the people we hire, you know, whenever we have to make changes to the business, you just, there's just a heightened sense of responsibility and, you know, effort that it takes to run a family business. And I think that that consistency really pays off. I think also the fact that ever since my grandfather started, we have really been a customer-oriented company. We put our customers above all else and do whatever we can to take care of them. And through good times and bad times, through depressions and pandemics, that has really helped us, that because our customers trust us, they know we will do what we say we'll do. And that has really, you know, helped us through all kinds of ups and downs in 102 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. No, I think that's, the trust is obviously the biggest thing. You know, I mean, you can't have a business, a successful business, without, you know, that your folks trusting you. So that's cool. Well, let me, I sidetracked you for a little bit, so let's get back on the topic. I'm curious, you know, I guess maybe take us back into the, we were kind of on that track of talking about the lights, right?
How right. That kinda,
yeah.
Right.
So maybe you could step us back to wherever I cut you off.
Sure. So in the early 1990s, I discovered LED technology. And in the 1990s, LEDs were, I mean, very few people had heard of them. Very few people knew what they were. Very few people knew what they did. And of course, they're not nearly as sophisticated as they are now. But the thing that really intrigued me about LEDs were that they used a lot less energy than traditional incandescent bulbs, and they were virtually indestructible. They wouldn't break. You could put them in water. So they had a lot of really promising attributes that would fit in an outdoor environment, right? And they weren't as fragile as typical incandescent bulb flashlights. And we were in the flashlight business, though not, it wasn't a big part of our business at that time. So I sat down and I tried to figure out how you could use these LEDs to make portable lighting. And originally, LEDs did not put out very much light at all. In fact, it's almost laughable how little light they put out compared to what they do now. But in the late 1996, we developed an LED product that was basically a small folding knife with an LED light in the handle that you activated with a little push button on the side. And of course, it didn't put out very much light, and we sold it as a keychain, almost novelty. But we sold it to one of our better customers, and they sold 250,000 pieces in 1 year, which Jeez. Was remarkable. And so that really, of course, got my attention. And then I started playing around with what would happen if you clustered a lot of these LEDs together. Could you get enough light to really make it a decent flashlight? And so back in the late 1990s, and actually right about the year 2000, we designed and built an LED flashlight that had three LEDs in the head of it. And it put out a whopping 20 lumens of light, which now today sounds laughable. But the fact is that the battery life on this product was hundreds of hours on one set of batteries. and the product was virtually indestructible. In fact, we would go to trade shows and throw them on the ground and, you know, try to dare people to try to break them. And of course, they couldn't do it. So that was our first introduction into the LED lighting business. And we're pretty sure that product was the first LED flashlight ever sold in the United States. So from there, we just began a long series of exploration and product development that used LEDs. And then as LEDs improved, our products, you know, would improve right along with them. So we got to know every LED manufacturer in the world, and it became obvious to us that LEDs were going to get more powerful every 12 to 18 months. And so we just set out a course to follow that trend and adapt those new LEDs to lighting products that we thought would be revolutionary in the portable lighting business. And in fact, they turned out to be.
Wow. Yeah. And I didn't realize that back in, I try to think now, 2000, it seems like I said, for me, I've just been wearing a headlamp on my head for my whole life. But yeah, I guess there was a time, like you're saying. So in the 90s, in the early 90s, there weren't any LED. I mean, there were headlamps, but they weren't the LED technology.
No, they're big, bulky, and they used, you know, alkaline batteries, and it wasn't much. The headlamp business was almost non-existent in those days, except for coal miners.
That's right. Yeah. And now it's obviously, like you said, the three LED is just so standard with, you know, I mean, like, and the same thing with the knives, right? You got the Gerbers and all those companies. You've also got the Petzls and the Black. I mean, everybody, mm-hmm. It's a huge market now. I mean, you probably how many knockoffs, right? Are there thousands, I'm sure, of companies that are doing this now.
Yeah. And one of the missions of our company is also that we always try to have some technological advantage to our products that differentiate them from something else in the market. So for instance, in knives, which most people would say is really hard to differentiate yourself because there's not a lot new, right? Well, we patented a double locking technology that you add to a traditional folding liner lock knife, which gives you a second level of safety by locking the blade twice. So if the liner lock fails, the secondary lock still holds the blade in place, which really reduces the number of accidents with knives. And then in lighting, our biggest technological breakthrough was in the mid-2000s when we patented optics specifically for LEDs, which created bigger, brighter, more consistent beams of light than any flashlight that had ever been produced. So the lights that we produce, they focus. So you can get a long distance spot beam and a big, beautiful, consistent flood beam in the same product. That was really a breakthrough technology and really differentiated us from, and still does today, pretty much to anybody on the market, that when you compare the beams in our products, they're really put out brighter, bigger, more consistent light than pretty much anything else on the market.
Yeah. And like, you know, all the features, right? The red lights are pretty popular and multi. I mean, you got some of these things that there's all sorts. I mean, there's like, I don't know how many features are on these lights now, but right. It's pretty amazing.
And again, the interesting thing is that because of technology, we are able to design specific products for specific uses. For instance, we designed our first optic, which created a big, beautiful flood beam and a real tight spot beam. Well, we also know that a lot of people use lights to do really up close work, including, you know, a fly fisherman, right? If you're tying a fly, you know, you don't need really bright light. What you need is a really nice light beam to use up close. So we developed what we call our inspection beam, which gives you, it really looks like a full moon and just gives you this beautiful, consistent beam of light up close that allows you to do anything from work on a computer to tie a fly, you know, you name it. And so we've been able to apply the technologies that we've developed to specific uses for people so that each time they need a light, we have the right light for that particular use.
Where do you find that inspection beam light? Is that on a lot of lights or is there one light that has that?
Well, it's on four or five different styles. Mostly they're on very small pen style lights that you can just put in your pocket because they're used a lot.
So not a headlamp.
Yeah. And we also use them on headlamps. So for instance, if you're working, you know, again, if you're a fly fisherman and you want to get your flies tied, you know, and the light's not good yet, then you use one of our inspection beam headlamps and gives you a beautiful lighted work area to do your work. So they really have a lot of applications. And then, of course, if you need a if you're walking to the river and it's not quite light yet, you know, you've got your headlamp and you can then focus it and put on the long distance spot beam so you can see down the trail and see where you're going. So, we, you know, we have a lot of products that are designed by the users. I mean, we have three or four guys on our staff who are avid fly fishermen who have lots of product ideas, believe me.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I'll try to put a link to one of those lights that has the technology you're talking about there in the show notes.
Yeah, the G20 is our most popular. It has a beautiful little inspection beam and it fits nicely in your pocket. It's just great.
Oh, perfect. Okay, good. And I was just curious, you know, we're talking about knives and we're talking about headlamps. I'm just curious for you, obviously, you know, I guess you were there when the new technology with lighting, and I'm sure you were a big part of that or maybe the main part of that. But, you know, say you have to pick right now. So you got Coast, you got all this stuff going. You got to choose knives. You're selling knives or you're selling lights. Which one are you going with?
Dave, listen, I have three daughters, and that's like asking me to pick which of my daughters I love the most. It really is.
No kidding. Is it that hard?
It is really that hard. And just for the reasons you mentioned, I mean, the fact that we're still selling products that are very similar to what my grandfather used to start this company 102 years ago, I mean, that really means a lot to me. On the other hand, I was the one who got us into the LED lighting business, and I think it's safe to say that the LED lighting has transformed a category just like computers and cell phones, you know, transform their category. So to be a part of that is really exciting and really means a lot to me as well. And it is kind of interesting sometimes that in a way we're almost two different companies that, you know, we have this rich, rich tradition of very traditional products. And then we have some of the newest cutting edge technology in a category that is, you know, exploding. But we try to, you know, respect both parts of the business and we try to apply what we learn in each sides of those business to the other. So it's really fun. It's challenging, but it's fun.
Let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. Togan's Fly Shop, providing superior quality products at an affordable price, an amazing resource for fly tying materials, tools, and fly fishing accessories. Togan's has you covered when looking for unique in-house products, but also supports and supplies materials and tools from other leading fly brands you know and trust. Togan's is now offering their mystery fly tying box, where they simplify the process for you in choosing materials. You're only one click away from these hand-picked subscription tying boxes that are packed with value at almost half the cost. And I recently made a order through Togan's, and the experience was perfect. After a recent trip nymphing for trout, I had to replace my tungsten beads and some jig hooks and a few other items. The products arrived in a couple of days from Togan's with a nice little card, a bonus value, and a welcome note from the Togan's family. Since 2005, Togan's has been over-delivering on price and customer service, so it's time to discover for yourself what the buzz is all about. Head over to wetflyswing.com/Togan's and take a look at their diverse selection of products today. You can support this podcast by clicking over to take a look at Togan's online. That's wetflyswing.com/TOGENS. Togan's. Okay, now back to the show.
we've had obviously a number of fly fishing, founders, executives, you know, things like that. And Orvis is a big fly fishing company, like similar to you guys. You know, they've been around a long time. It's a family business, and they're just a really great company. And I asked the a past CEO on a past episode. I'll put a link in the show notes to that. Perk Perkins. You know, about the products, right? Like, how do you, and he gets into that. And it's really interesting because, you know, they do everything, but they've kind of narrowed it down a little bit, right? Trying to focus things. And for you guys, I mean, obviously you've got knives, you've got lights, you've got some other products. I mean, what other, as you look into the future, I mean, without giving away secrets, I mean, how do you focus on what's next?
Well, first of all, we're fortunate in that the technology of lighting is still evolving. And we are constantly finding and discovering new ways to power lighting, new ways to shape light, new uses for smaller, more efficient lighting. Just, you know, one example, for instance, which is a little bit removed from the outdoor category, but we also make work lights for people using on job sites and things like that, places like that. And we have basically been able to replace the traditional old, really hot halogen work lights that you plugged in and, you know, they were easily breakable. They were very dangerous. We've replaced those now with LED work lights, which are half or a third of the size. They put out more light and they put out better light, and they're safer than those traditional work lights. So there's another example of where we've been able to apply our technology to a category that makes people's work safer and easier. So, you know, that's a good example. Then on the other extreme, because LEDs still don't require as much power as old incandescent lights, we make very, very small, like clip-on lights, for instance, that fishermen can clip onto their vest, and they have both hands free. They can focus the light. They can dim it. They can put it any light level they want if they're working up close, you know, or if they need to see down the trail. So there's all kinds of new developments coming out that help us create even better products for specific uses. And then, of course, the fact is now a lot of things are moving towards rechargeable battery technology. And that's another entire new wave for us where we have the only technology on the market that you can power our products with either a rechargeable lithium battery or use alkaline batteries. So you never have to worry about being without your light. If you're out on a camping trip and you don't have access to charge the product, all you got to do is slip in a couple AA batteries and you're good to go. So it kind of takes away that fear of, oh my gosh, if I have a rechargeable product, but I can't charge it, what happens? We eliminate that problem. On the other hand, if you use it as a rechargeable, you can save the cost and the disposal of all of those alkaline batteries. So it's really the best of both worlds.
Exactly. And, yeah, I'm interested. I mean, there's so many topics here. I mean, batteries and its disposal and things like that. I'm curious on that. I was just thinking, you know, I have I can't even think of the name of the company, but you know, like a portable, right? Rechargeable. You got your thing. Everybody's got a phone now. So, you know, if you're out, you know, on a trip, you probably have your phone and you can charge it now. I mean, a headlamp, is the technology almost there where you've got these headlamps where literally you just don't need, I mean, you could just set it out in the sun and it charges for the night, or is that not quite there yet?
Well, we're working on that, but
or is that's one of those things that's
it's out front. Well, that's really probably not a secret. There's a lot of people working on that, but The key there is it's all about the solar technology and whether, you know, right now to have the solar technology needed to power the headlamp, the solar panel is 10 times bigger than the headlamp. So it's not real practical yet. But that's one direction clearly that there'll be a breakthrough there in the next few years. You know, the other things are, you know, fast charging and long charging. One of the things that about our products is that we have different modes in our lights. So, for instance, headlamps is a great example. We have headlamps that when they're fully charged, they'll last up to 10 days of use on one charge if you put them in the energy saving mode, which is frankly is adequate for 90% of what you need a headlamp for. So there's a lot of technology that's being developed that kind of solves some of those, you know, questions that you just brought up is, you know, when do you feel really comfortable taking a rechargeable product?
Yeah, that's the, no, and I think you guys are hitting on it. I mean, that's the problem with the old rechargeable is that you don't want to get stuck. And then, but I love the fact that you've got the alkaline battery interchangeably. It just was going to note, you got me, you know, battery, and we're not going to have time to dig into the battery technology, but we had one of our sponsors this last year is TurtleBox Audio, and it was really interesting. I'll put a link to that show. He talked about in that episode how their technology to their batteries, because literally when I first used their product, which is a portable radio, audio speaker, I literally never charged it for like months. And I asked him, I said, so what's the deal with your battery? Like, it seems like you don't even have to charge it. And basically they use a similar technology like Tesla uses, you know, the car, it's a similar battery. Like, and I'm not sure if that's something you guys have dug, if there's any overlap there. Have you heard about that? I mean, obviously, you know, I'm sure know about the Tesla technology.
Yeah. Well, yes. In fact, you know, in fact, the one of the main batteries that we use in our rechargeable product is the same battery that they use in Teslas, except that in Teslas, they use hundreds of them packed together. And we obviously don't need that many. But you've hit on a very important thing is there's a lot of different battery technologies being worked on. And the other thing that you may see in the future is, you know, right now there's still pretty much everybody's working on batteries that provide you more power in a smaller, you know, size, right? Which is great. But there's always limitations to those. Some of them are environmental limitations. Some of them are materials limitations because some of those like Tesla batteries, you know, they require some very high levels of very rare materials, and that could be an issue sometime down the road. But there are other types of batteries being developed that use different chemical makeups, which, might solve some of those issues. So it's certainly an area that we're keeping an eye on. We have, in fact, a whole team that works just on that particular component and area of our products.
Do you guys still do, on the knives, do you have like a fillet knife that's similar to that original one?
Well, in fact, we brought back my grandfather's original salmon fillet knife for our 100th anniversary. And so we still have that available. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. I might have to pick that. I'll talk to my dad later. I'll see if he has that. If not, I might have to pick up one of those.
Yeah. We'll be happy to see that you get one.
Okay. And that's the cool thing about Coast, I think, is that, again, you guys offer a really quality product, you know, but it's a reasonable price, right? I'm not even sure what the price point is on that, but you know what I mean? You're not going to pay hundreds of dollars for necessarily some stuff.
It's probably, you know, people have say that a lot about us, that they really feel that our products are not only technologically advanced, but they're very, you know, fairly priced, and they're really a good value for the money. And I think, again, that gets back to kind of that family company attitude. You know, I know my grandfather, when he was making salmon fillet knives and Scribner's knives for fishermen and for loggers, you know, in those days, the worker had to buy the products themselves. And they would go through those salmon fillet knives, you know, quite a bit, right? They needed, you know, three or four of them a year, maybe. And my grandfather and my father after him were always very conscious of providing products that the everyday working man and woman could afford, rather than, you know, creating some, and I'm not trying to, you know, point the finger at other people, but not creating just premium products that you could only afford once in your lifetime, but products that you could trust that would work, that were backed by a lifetime warranty like ours are, and that everyday working men and women could afford to use either on the job or when they went fishing or hunting or whatever. And it's interesting that how much that kind of methodology has really resonated and continued even to this day, that we really try to create products that are priced fairly and that will are built to last.
Yeah, no, I think it resonates with, I'm sure, a lot of people listening here. The price point is an interesting conversation because, you know, and we deal with that too with, you know, with the stuff we do with our sponsors, because I'm always thinking, okay, you know, I want to provide basically an experience where when, the, you know, when we work with our, you know, with our clients, it's like, it's a no brainer. You know, it just feels like it's not an overcharge. It's not a thing that's like, it's no brainer that these folks are going to want to come back and work with us. And for you, I'm not sure where I landed to your knife that first time, but I think it started with the price point. I was like, oh, wow. I can't remember what it was. Again, you know what I'll do? I'm going to pull it out. This will be fun radio stuff here. Let's see if I can find it. It's, I think it was it's a little bit of the heavier duty one. It's, yeah, I got it right here. And you know what the cool thing about this is, David? It's got that locking, the secondary locking feature.
Oh,
you
great. Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is the one thing I remember when I did it, because I had some, a lot of knives that never had that. And, yeah. And it's the, yeah, just the RX 300.
Oh yeah. It's a great knife. Yeah.
RX, you know, it's heavy duty. It's, but I remember when that locking feature, I didn't even know what it was. And I put it in, I was like, man, that's sweet, because I have kids. And the funny thing about my kids, they're 7 and 9, but they've been using knives since they were probably like 3 years old. You know what I mean? And, yeah. And we taught them well. We, you know, we were like, okay, you know, about safety and stuff. But so anyways, so you could check out that.
One of the other cool things about having a family company is speaking of people that have knives a long time, I mean, virtually every month or two, we'll have somebody who will call us or email us and show us a picture of a knife that he found. For instance, just the other day, a guy found a knife when he was cleaning out his grandfather's attic, who had just passed away. And it was a beautiful old Coast knife, but it had been, you know, it had seen its better days, right? And he asked me if there was anything we could do with it. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, you send it to us and we'll have one of our knife experts fix it for you, because we have a couple people on staff who can repair knives. And he sent it to us. We fixed it up. We sent it back to him. It doesn't look brand new, but it looks really good. And, you know, he wouldn't have parted with that knife for thousands of dollars. It meant that much to him. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, the kind of effort that we'll go to that, frankly, not a lot of other companies would do. But it just shows you that family connection still runs really deep after 102 years.
That's it. Yeah, that's the service. That's cool. Well, David, I think just a couple, maybe we can take this out of here, a quick little rapid fire round. I had a few questions for you. These are just some,
sure.
It's just some general stuff that, you know, I think probably things you've been asked many times before. But let's start out just the top. You know, we have a lot of, definitely there's companies, there's brands, there's people that are listening here. I'm curious if you were to give somebody, say, just a little tip to help maybe them in their business. I mean, what do you, because obviously you guys have been successful, you've stuck around. Is there one thing you kind of, looking back, that you might, you know, give that person today?
Yeah, I think that it's maybe sound a little too simple, but if there's something that you really like to do and you can figure out a better and easier way to do it, whether it's fishing, hunting, camping, plumbing, you name it. If there's something that you can identify that you think you could do better or build something that did something better, go for it. Because it's amazing to me how many times you'll see a product on the market that you look at it and you say, gosh, why didn't somebody else think of that? Well, the fact is, maybe somebody did, but they just didn't have either the courage or, you know, the wherewithal to try it. And the other thing is, in this day and age, it's easier than ever to try to develop a product and sell it because of the internet. And, you know, 10, 20 years ago, you were at the mercy of big companies like Walmart and, you know, Cabela's, you name it, right? But now, if you have a good idea and you can build it, you can market it yourself. And so that would be my advice, is find a solution to a problem that needs a solution and develop a product to do it better.
Yep. That's an awesome tip. Yeah. And it's a great time. It's a cool time we live in now. I mean, I'm not sure how you, it sounds like you look at it positively, right? I mean, you've got these tons of these small little, you know, sometimes it's one person, sometimes it's more, but, you know, I'm sure there's lots of, you know, new companies you've seen in the knife business, right? Or in the light business.
Oh,
do you,
absolutely.
And when you see those, you just kind of think that's just healthy competition, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I take my hat off to some of them. I think some, you know, people, you see really interesting, good ideas all the time. And it's, I think we're in a phase right now of business that is more creative than I've seen maybe in my entire career.
That's pretty powerful, really. I love digging in a little bit on the music or the podcast, because I'm not sure if you're much of a music fan or a podcast. Do you listen to any podcasts, or are you more podcasting or more music?
How I Built This, right? That's the...
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a terrific, one of my favorites.
There you go. So I was just going to say, so if you had to pick one, so How I Built It, and that is, yeah, I think that's Guy Raz, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. Awesome. As we take this out of here, just looking ahead, we talked a little bit about just touching on the surface, but, you know, new products, new things coming. Anything you want to give a shout out in the next, you know, say 6 months or a year, that's kind of, we can expect, for, you know, coming up for you guys to give us a little, surprise.
Yes. I think that, people should pay attention to our website, because within the next few months, you'll see some really exciting new, LED lighting products, geared even more specifically towards the outdoor user than our current products. And they'll have some features and some benefits that will be, we think, revolutionary in the outdoor market.
There you go. That's the perfect little sweetener. So this will be, I'm excited already. Okay, I'll put a link out to, obviously, to your website, so people can check that out. And this will probably be going out in a couple months, so we'll be a little bit closer to that,
great.
That period. Yeah,
great.
This is awesome. I think it sounds like you guys are, like you said, you're kind of almost equal amounts. You got the kind of the blue collar, you know, people working out there, but also, I mean, would you say it is kind of an equal versus that in the outdoor space?
It is pretty equal. Frankly, it's probably a little, well, of course, as I said before, there's a lot of crossover, so it's really impossible to know. But if you look at where our products are sold, yeah, it's pretty equal.
All right, David. Well, hey, I just want to say thanks for, producing the great products. Like I said, you know, kind of my knife and some of the lights and stuff I've had over the years. I'm excited to keep in touch with you and looking forward to share the story, and we'll talk to you soon.
Good. Well, thanks. And the one last thing I want to leave you with is the good news about Coast is, and people ask me this all the time, is, you know, is there going to be a fourth generation? And I'm glad to say that we do have a fourth generation in the company. So we're planning on another 102 years. So.
Oh, wow. No kidding.
I don't know if you'll be around then, Dave, but somebody will be.
Yeah, that's right. Well, so fourth generation, that's amazing. Okay, well, maybe we'll save that to the next one to see when we get to that point. We'll bring on the fourth generation if they're up to that.
Great.
Point. We'll go from there.
Okay.
All right, Dave, we'll talk to you soon.
Nice talking to you. Thanks. Bye.
So there you go. If you've been enjoying this podcast and want to share it out, that would be much appreciated. You could also leave a 5-star review at wetflyswing.com/love. That'll give you a quick little place to whatever app you're on. It'll help you easily share it over there. Want to thank you in advance for sticking around today. We had a great episode with another really cool company, Coast. I've always got their knife in my in my pocket, or if not in the pocket, in the car or the boat. So hope you have a chance to maybe get out and check them out, see what they have going, if you need a new headlamp or knife. If you have a product that you really love, maybe a knife company or somebody you'd love me to dig into and you want to hear that story, send me a message, dave@wetflyswing.com. I'd love to maybe bring them on as we continue to dig into our outdoor products that are focused on that big trip we're planning for. We're thinking of going down, say, some crazy trip up to Alaska. That's our focus, some Alaskan trip. What is all the gear you need for that trip to stay comfortable? That's kind of the focus I'm thinking of right now. I'll definitely have at least one, probably two pocket knives, one to have with me and one as a backup. So there you go. That's it. That's a wrap. That's all I have for you today. Thank you again for the support and for sharing us out on social media. If you get a chance, talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.